Welcome back. This is KSQD 90.7 and KSQD.org. We've done two previous shows on the homeless and the houseless here on Talk of the Bay. This one is occurring after 2 years of a pandemic. That is, along with a report and update on the state of homelessness in Santa Cruz, we are also celebrating the continuous feeding and clothing assistance that Food Not Bombs has delivered during the entire pandemic time. It has been a Herculean task, and today we will hear from folks who've been on the front lines of that effort. We will also be hearing from a spokesperson from Sanitation for the People and get an update from a city planning commissioner on the city council's proposed oversized vehicle ordinance, which appears to target people who sleep in their vehicle. Up first is Food Not Bombs founder Keith McHenry. Keith McHenry is a writer and co-founder of the global movement Food Not Bombs, and he is also on the executive board of the National Union of the Homeless. Welcome, Keith McHenry, to Talk of the Bay. Keith, are you with us? Okay, I'm going to wait to get that connection with Keith, and we're going to go to Joy Schendeldecker. She is also here. She's a member of the Democratic Socialists of America's Eco-Socialist Working Group, and she works with Sanitation for the People. She's been on the show before and periodically updates us on her work with the houseless. Joy Schendeldecker, welcome to Talk of the Bay.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for having me back.
Yes. Tell us what it's looking like out there these days from your vantage point from doing Sanitation for the People and being an advocate for the homeless. What are you hearing and seeing?
Well, it's definitely been challenging as people continue to be moved out of some of the places where we do work with them. We've been in the past year primarily working with people who are living at Camp Paradise and Hell's Trail, the areas you can access it from the end of Felker Street. So it goes along the river and the highway by the cemetery.
Right.
And, you know, people were not moved out of the area before the storm in December and, you know, not given a good, safe, alternative place to live. They were moved after the storm, and the city spent an enormous amount of money to clean up sort of a mess that they partly made by allowing people to not have safe spaces to go, by not having a relationship of trust and safety. And the Hell's Trail area is going to be cleared again soon. So we've had multiple movements of people. It's really hard to have stability. It's really hard for people to keep their possessions. People have been moved. The only place where people have been told that they can go is to the Benchland. So you continue to have a concentration of people either staying there and not really being given great, like say people's tents wear out and the community provides them generally rather than the municipality.
And you're saying that
it looks pretty bedraggled.
It's a problem of this, of the city's making. That's what you said, right? By not having a level of trust that they can engage with people who are houseless.
I do think that's a huge part of the problem. When you have police involved, when you have other sort of people who are in positions of support, but they're sort of implicated in a system that has failed people repeatedly. And I think the people who work, the staff that are on the ground, do a great job, and care, the camp stewards, but there's not enough of them and they don't have enough resources.
Okay. Keith McHenry is on the line. Let me get him in the conversation. Keith, are you there now? Keith McHenry?
Hold on.
We had him for a second. In the studio with me.
What's going on?
Hey, you are there. Hey, what are you hiding
on me
or something?
I've been here the whole time. I'm trying to talk. Why didn't I get to talk?
I don't know. Well, you know, hey, thanks for being on the show. I gave you this bang-up introduction. Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, you know, executive board member of National Union of Homeless. Keith, I want you to – I see that you've called for a celebration this Sunday, March 13th, at the Clock Tower in Santa Cruz. How have we arrived at this moment? And tell us what this event is about and some of the history that's gone into it.
Okay, when the pandemic started on March 14th, 2020, we got news that that's a Saturday, that the other indoor soup kitchens and other food programs in the county would be closed. As turned out to be the case, there became some modification of that over time, like if you were in the armory or you were in the in the vet's hall, you would get catered meals delivered there for a bit. But otherwise, if you did not make it into these facilities, which majority of the people did not, you were in a situation where you had to eat. Basically, you couldn't even get water at first because they shut down the bathrooms, you know, at the garages. And, of course, if you were trying to go to the bathroom in a restaurant or something like that, they were closed. Everything was closed. We were the fresh water, and we were the food. And so we moved across the street from the post office, where we had been every weekend for years, to put a distance between us and Cooper and all the people that were camping up against the wall, and started at the Clock Tower. And we've served every single day, 100% volunteer effort, with huge amounts of just community support of people from, even city workers on the ground, support from police, but also, just the beat cops, but also support from just huge numbers of residents who would come and bring us donations of food, clothing. We had people drop everything, like auto mechanics dropped their whole schedule just to make sure our van got back up and running. Community, the court referral, we were for much of the early part of this, the only place a volunteer could go and volunteer was at Food Not Bombs. So we were out there every day, and it'll be now 2 years we've been out there. The Sentinel claims that we were evicted 8 times. I count another 2 times that didn't make the media. So
let me stop you right there, Keith. We're going to get back to that. I just want to enter into the program. We have 3 volunteers, those residents that you said stepped up and got involved. I'm going to start with Max Summers. I'm going to bring her into the conversation. She grew up in Virginia and earned her art history degree from Haverford College in Pennsylvania. She works in Santa Cruz as an archivist and winery assistant. She serves meals and drives the van every week. Max Summers, welcome to Talk of the Bay.
Hi, thanks for having me, Chris.
Tell us what it's like as a volunteer being literally at ground zero in the homeless crisis in Santa Cruz, preparing and serving food to the homeless and driving that van. What have you seen? What's it been like?
It feels like a really important job. It's also been really rewarding, a really rewarding experience. It, in a lot of ways, feels like a celebration out there every day, which is really bringing me out and bringing me back week after week. I've been pretty new to the program compared to some veterans who have been serving food for years and years here in Santa Cruz. But it really is a beautiful thing, and I feel really lucky that we're dealing with an abundance of food and energy and people and time that allows us to be out there trying to make the best experience for everyone every day.
You have to actually clean the place up, and I know the city has taken issue and allegedly accused Food Not Bombs of not cleaning up areas. What's been your experience with the opening and closing for that 1 to 4 p.m. Feeding that goes on every day?
Yeah, I'm a closing driver, so I'm part of that process. We've been really mindful, especially since we've gotten that feedback of making sure to clean up every day, making sure that we're taking out the trash. We take the trash with us every day. We bring our own trash bins. Sometimes there are containers that make their way away from the Clock Tower. That's a bit difficult to control. But the reality of the situation is that when you're producing the amount of food that we're, the amount of meals that we're serving every day, there is a little bit that's going to miss the trash can, and we hope that the community will help us to continue to make that area where we're serving and the surrounding downtown as clean as it can be, so that we can all enjoy it. But I'm not sure where all of the complaints are coming from. It's looking pretty good to me at the end of the day.
Zoe Lacheminan also works on the streets with Food Not Bombs. She's a volunteer and also a volunteer at the Secret Woman's Garden Shelter. Zoe, what has it been like working with Food Not Bombs? What's your experience?
It's been a great experience. I've been doing this since November 2020, and it's just really been great to see the community that's been built along the way and just how resilient everyone is.
And how many folks are you feeding a day in your estimation, or maybe you've got the actual numbers?
I think anywhere on average, it's maybe 100 to 200 meals a day, every day.
100 to 200 meals a day. UCSC student Jazz, I do not have your last name. I didn't see your bio, so forgive me. Jazz, what has it been like in your experience working with Food Not Bombs?
Hi, thanks for having me, Chris.
Yes, welcome.
I think my experience has been really, really great overall. I'm a pretty new driver. I started about 6 months ago, but for me, I kind of see Food Not Bombs as like the ultimate form of nonviolent protest. You know, I read a lot of things in the paper about how Santa Cruz doesn't like us and they think we're dirty. And it's just, it couldn't be more untrue. We provide so many meals, like Zoe said, every day, and we keep our place nice, and it's just such this atmosphere of generosity, and there's such a community that we have there. It's just really amazing to be able to give away free food in this society.
Keith McHenry, I hear the city is making it tough for you to find a place to cook. What I'm hearing, not only in this conversation, but out on the street too, that Food Not Bombs has become a very important source of not only food, but social space as well. Why is the city making it hard on you, and where are you going to continue cooking if you can't cook at the church where you've been cooking?
Well, we are, thankfully, we have been, we have dear friends that work at Environmental Health, and they, with the county, and they have been amazing allies even before the COVID, but all through COVID itself. And so they provided us with a list last week and we found a kitchen in Scotts Valley that I think is going to really work. And so we agreed to that. We came to consensus on that last night at the meeting. So, but the other issue is, and I have to say, the city has a long history of harassing the Little Red Church, which is terrible, which is why a lot of attention has been around there, particularly around the coffee house, and one of the reasons Reverend Joel had to leave.
That was
so
a shame.
They've not been positive in that regard. But the other issue is that they have been actually continually brutal against Food Not Bombs and against the Santa Cruz Homeless Union for years, and I think part of it is because we're interfering with their ability to make Santa Cruz appear as though it has no homeless people. And I think one of the things that most shocks me when I listen to conversations at, when the city councilors talk at council meetings and so on, there is this lack of understanding that these are our people. Many of these people were born and raised here. When there's occasionally like an argument or something at the meal, it's often between two people that both went to Bay Elementary. And so, they're not understanding that this is our people. These are our community people. And if they would get past this idea that the people that live outside are vermin or less than or something like that, and start to think of them as our neighbors, as the beautiful people that they really are, then there would be an effort to solve this problem. And I've been reading on Nextdoor.com through somebody else's account, because I'm not allowed on it, about the struggle for housing over in Soquel. And they don't want homeless people in the 36 units or whatever it is, and they're like really upset. They automatically, once those people are in the unit, they're no longer homeless people. They're housed people just like them. We've got to get to that point. When I started FUNAP OMS 42 years ago, there were virtually no homeless people in the United States. That's because we did have public housing and things like that. And all of that under Reagan, and then it's gotten worse under Clinton and so on, has just gone by the wayside. And I recall speaking at City Council here in 1988, advocating that they start to plan for an increased number of unhoused people by building units, which they're now just starting to build. And if they had been building them back in the early 90s, those people would be housed.
Keith, that's where the problem lies. Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate it. I want to turn a little page here and dig a little bit deeper into the issue you brought up about harassment. Joy Schendeldecker, I know that you follow city council politics fairly closely. What exactly is this oversized vehicle ordinance that's being debated? Because I've heard as that being a tool, as the police used to tell me when I was on the city council, we need a tool in our toolbox to move people along. Is this just another one of those tools? How did it come about?
Well, I mean, what the council majority will say is that we can't keep doing nothing, as if there's some false binary that, you know, not criminalizing people is doing nothing. So I'll try to sum this up because it's a little convoluted. It's a rebirth of an oversized vehicle ordinance that was kind of arrested in its development in 2015 or 16. So a subcommittee put forward a slightly revised ordinance to regulate larger vehicles in the city of Santa Cruz, including in the coastal zone by the ocean. And in theory, this will affect both housed and unhoused residents who have larger vehicles and trailers and visitors to our community, tourists or whatnot. And they have a narrowly defined residential and visitor permit program outlined in the ordinance, plus an increase in restrictions, an attempt to basically ban street parking for unpermitted vehicles, which you can't get a permit if you don't have a house or a hotel that you're staying at, to basically ban the parking of those vehicles between midnight and 5 a.m. So it's really directed, from my perspective and groups that I'm involved with, it's a thinly veiled ordinance that really is mostly going to affect people who are living in their vehicles.
Okay. I'm just going to stop you right there because I want to enlarge this conversation. I want to go to Cindy Dawson. I appreciate she's with us in the studio. Cindy has lived in Santa Cruz since 1999. She is currently the chair of the Santa Cruz Planning Commission and is a member of the Santa Cruz County Democratic Central Committee. In her day job, she's a marine scientist who focuses on connecting the latest science to decision makers so that they can make the best informed decisions for ocean health and sustainability. Cindy Dawson, welcome to Talk of the Bay.
Thank you so much, Chris, for having me.
In your capacity as planning commissioner or planning commission chair, you had an item before you this past week, and I'm going to quote, it says, to implement citywide safe parking programs for unhoused city residents living in oversized vehicles licensed and registered in the city of Santa Cruz, end quote. This is a pretty controversial issue and not something the planning commission deals with very often that I'm aware. What did you all decide?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I really appreciate the opportunity to just share with the listeners the process of what happened at the Planning Commission and kind of the overall purview of the Planning Commission generally. So what happened this past Thursday, March 3rd, is that the oversized vehicle ordinance, which I'll call the OVO for the rest of our interaction here, is that the OVO was adopted by the City Council last year in November. And what the Planning Commission does generally is overall, we issue permits to implement the general plan and ordinances adopted by the city council. And so what came before the commission was an appeal to the adopted oversized vehicle ordinance. And that appeal came to the commission to hear. And then what we actually had for consideration was issuing the permits to implement the oversized vehicle ordinance. So we weren't actually debating the oversized vehicle ordinance, nor were we debating the appeals. When it comes to the Planning Commission, it comes to the Planning Commission what they called de novo, which just means anew. So we were hearing it from scratch, and that's why if people downloaded the agenda packet, it was something like 400 pages long, because it was the entire history of the oversized vehicle ordinance. And so what the Planning Commission did is we heard a staff report that talked about the whole history of the oversized vehicle ordinance. Then what we heard is we heard from each appellant, and we used that information in addition to the significant number of public comments to help inform our decision about whether we were going to issue permits to implement this ordinance adopted by the city council. And so the take home is that we did indeed issue the permits, but with some substantial changes associated with the conditions of approval. It's a very common practice when permits are issued. There's a list of conditions that the permittee must meet in order to be in compliance with the permit. And so there was some substantial best practices for safe parking programs that were integrated in the permit, and that passed 4-3. And so that's where we are right now. And next steps are that those permits will be processed, and that the city would have to be in compliance for those permits. They would have to meet the conditions of approval. And this decision is appealable in the coastal zone to the Coastal Commission.
Okay, I'm not even going to ask you what staff thought about this, because I can imagine they were not too happy. But why the 4-3? What were the arguments by the three who didn't want to support these changes?
Yeah, so I encourage the public, they could actually watch the meeting. And some of the things that were brought up by the folks who did not vote in favor were that they felt that the changes were substantial, and they wanted to send it back to staff for review, is what we heard most from the folks who voted not to approve the permits. And then the people and the group of us who did vote to approve the permits, we felt that the changes are very well supported and data-supported changes that are best practices for safe parking programs. And so we thought it made sense to move forward.
It sounds like this issue was freighted with great fear on the part of many in the community who support homeless people's self-determination and ability to possibly live in their vehicle because they can't afford a place in Santa Cruz. It sounds like what the Planning Commission did was make this ordinance better. Is that your view?
I think that what we were really, you know, all of us on the Planning Commission take our service very seriously. And so a lot of us do a lot of homework before the meetings. And we really felt, I think the majority felt, that the changes reflected best practices to actually make safe parking programs helpful to the unhoused community as opposed to harmful. And I can't speak for the other commissioners, but that's certainly why I voted in the affirmative, because I do feel like if we're going to have a safe parking program for our unhoused community, we want to be using data-informed best practices that are actually going to be helpful to that community. And that's what I feel like we did.
Keith McHenry, you had a comment.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the problems with the existing safe parking is that most people can't qualify. And one of the things that we do spend a lot of money on is on repairing vehicles paying for smogging, registration, things like that, so people could ultimately qualify. But, you know, for example, the president of the homeless union, Alicia Kuhl, lives in her van with three little kids and a husband, disabled husband, and they don't qualify, even though they're fully registered, everything's legal about them. They have never, in 3 years, been able to get into the Safe Parking Program. And this is so it's essentially a barrier to probably a majority of the people who could use it. And, you know, and so it's a tragic misleading of something that would potentially help. And it breaks my heart every single day where so the city tickets people aggressively so that their cars can't be registered. And then we try to pay for those registrations if we can. And often we cannot. And then the cars are towed and junked with all their belongings in them. And then we hand them a tent at Food Not Bombs so they can, and then direct them first to a levee where then they are kicked off by the police into the benchlands. And the most tragic thing is many of these are, you know, when you first are worried about being homeless, and we are at a condition now where the rents are went up over 30% in this area in the past 12 months. If you have any means at all, the first thing you do is buy an oversized vehicle to move your family into, just like what Alicia did when she found out she was being kicked out of an unpermitted.
Excellent point. Keith McHenry's going to stay with us. I'm going to have to let Cindy Dawson go. Cindy, a final comment that you might want to share with our listeners. Is this headed for the Coastal Commission or the City Council or both?
Yeah, I would also just encourage folks to go on the Planning Commission website, and there is now an action summary up there. And what Keith said is very true. One of the substantial changes that were made is we removed all barriers to participation in the Safe Parking Program to address exactly what Keith said, because there are, you know, if you have registration requirements and those types of things, that prevents a lot of people from being able to use it. So I encourage people, go to the website, check out the conditions of approval. And this could be headed to the Coastal Commission if an advocacy group chooses to appeal. If not, it will go into place. And again, the city will not be able to enforce the oversized vehicle ordinance until they have met all the conditions of approval. So go to the website, check out the conditions of approval, and make sure you watch Planning Commission meetings.
Cindy, real quick, what is that website?
It's the City of Santa Cruz. .com, and then you just hit the Department Planning Commission, and then you go to Agendas and Reports, and you'll see the March 3rd line, and you'll see a summary, and you'll see media, and you can click on those links, and you'll be able to actually see what went down last Thursday.
Thank you for asking that, Howard, because I've had a hard time getting to that site. We're going to have to leave it there. We're up against the half-hour break. We'll be back with part two of the show right after these messages. We're here at the town clock. There's music, yeah. There's tables filled with clothes. About two dozen people are milling around, eating and picking up used clothes. I'm here with Ryan, who is currently homeless. And I'm asking you, Ryan, what is your solution to homelessness or houselessness?
Well, my solution would be instead of like all the billions of dollars that go to funding the war effort or building new machines that, you know, kill people, they could instead build like shelters that, you know, have the basic needs for people to stay in and, you know, are housed and are off the street. And maybe provide you know, essential care for, you know, like mental ill kind of patients and stuff like that. But and also, I think it's actually up to, you know, some individuals, like whether they're homeless or not. It's, you know, kind of personal choices. And, you know, they're just not capable of either having a house. But, yeah, I think the government really needs to be providing that, or rich people. You know, it's up to people to kind of to use their compassion to try to help people. And I guess there's not as many people doing that. There are some.
Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Talk of the Bay. This is KSQD 90.7 and KSQD.org. Today in the program, we are talking about the state of homelessness and the houseless in Santa Cruz. I am talking with Food Not Bombs co-founder Keith McHenry, Sanitation for the People's Joy Schendeldecker, and Santa Cruz residents Mac Summers and UCSC student Jazz. So I'm gonna go right to Mac Summers. You know, you just heard from someone at the town clock today about the issues of being homeless, whether it is a lifestyle choice. And then he went and said, no, the government also has to provide mental health services, housing for people who are homeless. What's been your experience, Mac Summers, in your time with Food Not Bombs in helping organize the feeding program at the town clock?
Yeah, I think... as we all know, it's a different situation for each person, and each person is in the condition to be showing up for meals for different reasons. I think a lot of it has to do with mental health services and addiction services for people. They're just not getting the help that they need anywhere. And so we end up, you know, welcoming them in for meals where we are. And we don't always have the resources that we need to help deal with kind of those bigger issues. So we're doing our best to be out there every day and do what we can to at least get people fed and get people clothed and keep people warm from day to day.
Joy Schendeldecker of Democratic Socialists of America's Eco-Socialist Working Group and Sanitation for the People. Is it a lifestyle choice from the people that you encounter, or is it destitution? Is it frustration, unemployment? Are people doing it because they want to just live outside, or they're, you know, what do you think?
Well, I think you'll get a different answer from everybody that you ask about it. But some of the common things that we hear, you know, even from people who say that they're choosing it, that they like the freedom or, you know, they don't want to follow anybody's rules. Even those people have generally some stories about aging out of foster care without support, a history of trauma, whether as a child, a young adult, or as an adult, losing jobs, losing housing through no fault of their own, having bad educational experiences. So I think even then it's complicated.
It is complicated.
Yeah. So, but I think, you know, housing, the lack of housing and stability is the number one thing. And maybe not every single person wants to be in a housie like the rest of us that are here right now. And you know, that's okay. We have to respect people's decisions, but we can still meet them where they are and be neighbors and friends, and treat them like the sort of family members that they are, you know?
Jazz, UCSC student, you are living on campus or in town?
Hi. Yes, hi. Jazz Pierre here. So I'm actually not a UCSC student.
Oh, I got that wrong then.
No worries. I'm actually a gap year. I'm taking a gap year. I graduated from Harbor High School this last year.
I think we met, right?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, okay. What is your sense of what's going on? Are people encountering like lifestyle choices, or is it real hardships out there, or just a combination of many things?
You know, I don't really think it's a lifestyle choice. I think, like Joy said, there are probably a few people here and there who who maybe do choose it in a sense. What I do know is that the number one cause of homelessness is poverty. It's because people can't get enough money to actually live in a home. And I think what I've seen and what the people I've worked with are actually in really vulnerable situations. Like I've seen a lot of people who are mentally ill and can't get a job, or maybe don't speak English. Like maybe English is their second language. I work with a lot of people who simply are just in poverty, and it's really sad. And I think there's a lot of shame around that sort of situation. And you know, I'm not as educated in this issue as I'd like to be. I work a lot of like hands-on work with Food Not Bombs, but I have read some studies about Scandinavian countries, and it's called they do this thing called housing first based solutions, and it's literally just where they give people houses, and it actually works. And so the solution to homelessness, I would say, is just to give people houses. And when we talk about things like a housing shortage, it's actually an artificial housing shortage caused by the markets. There's actually like 17 million homes that are empty in America, and not that many homeless people. And so I think if we just give these people the resources like homes, mental illness services, food to keep them alive and well, then they can get back on their feet and,
be productive. Jazz, yeah. Pierre, you grew up here. You're a local.
Yes.
How many folks do you meet? Because there's always this thing out there that says, oh my gosh, Santa Cruz is a cool place to be homeless or something. How many locals do you meet versus folks maybe who didn't grow up in Santa Cruz working with Food Not Bombs?
A lot of them are locals. Most of the people I've talked to are locals. One of my friends at Food Not Bombs, she went to Santa Cruz High. It's a lot of people that that grew up here and who live here, and this is their home, this is their community, and they really are being shunned away by the city. The city wants to push us out. The people don't want us at the clock tower, and I think it's really important for us to be there so that people can recognize that this is a problem and not just shy away from it. You know, I grew up here, and I think it's really easy to turn a blind eye to it and not just choose not to see it. But once I actually started working with these people, I noticed them so much more around downtown. I noticed how it actually is a problem that needs to be addressed. And I think Food Not Bombs is doing the very basic to keep these people alive, which is to feed them. You know, food is a human right. Every person is valuable and deserves to be fed. And I think the city of Santa Cruz actually needs to step it up and help these people.
Max Summers, you've got two jobs already. You're an art archivist and a winery assistant. What comes over you to dedicate so much time into this effort to help out with the situation of homelessness in Santa Cruz?
It feels like a pressing and valuable use of my time. It's also a way to connect with the reality of the community here in Santa Cruz. You know, I see friends from Food Not Bombs, whether they're volunteers or folks who are eating with us all around the city. And that's a really beautiful thing, to know your neighbors.
Building
so,
community.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been a really great way for me to meet people and to, you know, feel like I'm using my time well to connect and heal here in Santa Cruz.
I'm going to shoot it back to Keith McHenry. What are you hearing, Keith? What are you thinking?
Oh, the comments of everybody, just so beautiful. And the one man that was spoke, Ryan, pointed out a really important feature, which is the reason Food Not Bombs started in 1980 was because we thought that if the U.S. government started focusing its resources on building nuclear weapons and on war, as Reagan was promising to do if elected president, and then that's what happened, that would be robbing the community of the resources it needed to stay secure and healthy. And we've seen a steady increase in military spending, another budget of $770 billion. For just this coming year alone. And now we're in a situation where there is visible wars, you know, the other really horrendous wars that the U.S. has been funding and fighting have been generally invisible, like in Yemen and West Bank and so on. But now, you know, it's in headlines, big news, it's Ukraine and Russian conflict. But we also, at the same time, if you go to the Housing and Urban Development website, they will tell you that for $40 billion, they could end homelessness in the United States.
Okay, I want to get another voice of a homeless person in here that we met at the town clock today. Scott, what is your solution to homelessness, either in Santa Cruz or everywhere?
Well, I personally don't believe that any of us are homeless. We all need to get figured out and just figure out how we can be copacetic and all live together on this planet without killing each other or killing the planet. And that's the human... Yeah, that's what being human is. You know, we got to learn how to forgive. Self-reflection. We all got to look inside instead of looking outward.
Thank you.
You know what I mean?
Joe, if you could wave your magic wand and solve homelessness in the city of Santa Cruz, what would you do?
Well, I mean, I'd buy him a house. I'd give him some of this property that's not being used. All these buildings that are empty, the Rittenhouse building's been empty for 20 years. I mean, come on. We have all this property. We have 10 empty houses for every homeless person. Not 10 empty rooms, 10 empty houses.
Thank you, Joe. This is KSQD 90.7 and KSQD.org. We were hearing from Scott and Joe today. They were at the clock tower being fed by a couple of the people who are with us today in the studio. Joy Schendeldecker, what are you hearing from the voices of some of the young people that work with Food Not Bombs and some of the folks that you work with? And now we had some voices of folks who are homeless suggesting how to solve homelessness.
Well, it's great to hear all the comments. And one thing that I'm hearing as a common thread is a redistribution of wealth, which is actually a declared value of the majority of people in America. You know, whether people actually decide to do that when it comes down to, say, an empty home tax in their community is another story. But I think that having, say, mental health services that are not attached to police is one of the priorities of people in our community. And having affordable housing funds that are funded by the wealthiest people in our community. We have a lot of wealthy people, disproportionately high number of wealthy people in our community.
Tell me about it.
And to redistribute some of those assets that they've been able to extract from the, say, 90% of people who are less wealthy or poor, I think most people actually support that.
How do we do that? You're talking about like the billionaires, the Netflix guy and the Just Call Strawberry guy. They're both billionaires. How do we get one or two of their billions to redirect it to, you know, homeless services?
Yeah, I think that's a tough call. I mean, there are people who are professionals who do this, right? Who hit them up for money or apply for money from their foundations. But I'm actually talking about people who earn, say, more than $400,000 a year.
Which is very few people, very few of us. So you wouldn't be hitting
it's
a lot
like
of people.
The top 5% of Americans or something like that. I can't remember the exact percentage. But, you know, I think we need progressive taxes. We don't need regressive taxes like sales tax increases.
Which is on the city council agenda as we speak today.
It is. They're presenting... and they will hear comments soon about the homeless response plan for the next 3 years for the city, which is quite vague. And there's some increases for policing and police-related positions hidden in there in the budget. So that's not something that I support. I would instead support a progressive tax, like the empty home tax, for homes that are just sitting empty. One of the people from the clock tower spoke about this, that there's, you know, empty houses sitting there. And, you know, it's not necessarily a one-for-one exchange of that house for a person who's unhoused, but at the very least, one of the lowest bars we can set is that the person who owns that property and leaves it empty for more than 8 months a year can pay into a community fund. If they can afford that, they can afford $6,000.
Empty homes tax, it's out there right now. You signed the petition. Keith McHenry, redistribution of wealth. Is that a solution that you're focused on as well?
Well, for sure. I mean, first of all, all the money that is going into the military and the Bay Area, and particularly our area, is heavily militarized. You know, that's what Silicon Valley in many aspects is the brains to make Star Wars and drones and all that happen. But so redistribution from the military spending, which is what the message of Peanut Bombs is, and which is why we were standing at the clock tower in part, is to make that so politically important that finally the government does start to redistribute military funding towards what we need. But the other issue is how the homeless services themselves are organized and designed, because we are already spending $100 million a year here in Santa Cruz on homelessness. But sadly, the way that the laws and funding is organized is it doesn't really get to solutions. It's primarily paying for salaries of case managers and stuff, which if they could direct people into housing would be fantastic, but that's not what's happening.
Okay, Keith, I have...
That's where I think we need to solve some of that problem.
I have one of the things that this person is transitioning out of housing that I met with today at the town clock. I'm going to play his tape right now. His name is Nick. Talking to Nick here at the town clock. Nick, what are your solutions to homelessness or houselessness?
Need to lower the standards that are necessary for housing, such as having electricity, indoor plumbing, having a place that passes all the codes, occupancy limits for houses. I think that in the movie Dr. Zhivago, they said there was enough room for six families in this house. Six! I see many houses that have lots of room for many, many people, and they would not allow that in a truly just society when so many people are homeless.
How do you make it more just, and how would you get people to share their resources? Do you have a suggestion?
Well, I would have to change the laws as to occupancy, especially occupancy, because where I'm at, I'm staying by myself, and there's enough room for at least four people to sleep there every night.
So you yourself aren't homeless or houseless, or are you living outside or inside?
I was until I got on a program here and they got me a place to live, which I encourage people to do. It's difficult and you have to jump through a lot of hoops. You have to keep your appointments and check your mail, but it can be done. I'm living proof.
What program is it called?
I went through Encompass.
Thank you very much, Nick. Jazz Pierre, who is doing her gap year right now from Harbor High School and working with Food Not Bombs. How do you stay positive when you're out there with people serving them and seeing, you know, there's a lot of issues going on as we're hearing. How do you stay positive?
I think it's really easy to look around at the situation we're in and just think, oh my gosh, like we're doomed. This is so depressing. But I think one of the things that makes me want to keep going back, and I actually find it really hard to walk away sometimes and leave because I love being there so much, is the people. The people are probably the nicest people I've ever met in my life. I've met so many people. I've learned their stories. Everyone is just so kind and so generous, and just they really make my day.
Same question, Joyce Schendeldecker. How do you stay positive and keep going when sometimes, you know, the situation with the city, not, you know, they're talking about $14 million today in this new homeless program. And here's Food Not Bombs and your program, Sanitation for the People, working on a shoestring budget, but seemingly getting a whole lot done.
Well, I'll second the sentiment that the people that we interact with in our work are just amazing. And so that's a great motivator and makes you just feel so much more connected to community. And I also want to plug another group that I'm involved with, which is Santa Cruz Cares. And, you know, we're a team of people. We're open to new members. And we've been working really hard for the past year on first on CSSO, the Camping Standards Services Ordinance, and now the Oversized Vehicle Ordinance, and working with other people to change policy to make it better or less bad or to have it not happen is really sustaining. It's hard. It can be demoralizing. You can feel like you're not listened to. You can feel like you're blocked from participating in the democratic process because the majority seems to just not want to hear what you have to say or negotiate. But I would encourage everybody to look at Santa Cruz Cares on Instagram or Facebook or their website, santacruzcares.org, for really great analysis of issues around housing and houselessness and great information on OVO and action items, updates. We feel like we had a win at the Planning Commission, and that felt good to do that with a group of dedicated and caring and creative and intelligent people.
Nice. So that was Santa Cruz Cares' appeal to the first zoning administrator, I guess, and then they kicked it over to the Planning Commission. All I did was put in Santa Cruz Cares into any internet search engine, and a beautiful website comes up. Max Summers, same question. How do you stay positive in working with the homeless and the houseless and the situation where the government's not doing as much as they might be able to do, and the tax structure is such that those who have a lot keep getting more and those who have little seem to be getting less?
It feels really frustrating sometimes, especially when you're working with the people who those laws are affecting and those regulations are affecting in the systems. I think a lot of us are able to turn our heads from the severity of the situation. And when you're out there with the people who are living with the consequences of those decisions, it becomes really daunting. But I do feel that through this experience, we're all learning together and working together to try to work against some of those unfair policies. And I think that day-to-day work that we're doing makes it feel a little bit more bearable, like we might be getting somewhere slowly.
Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs, you're going to get the last word here. How do you stay upbeat and positive? Anything you want to share with us?
I just love the people. You know, I mean, this is like my family that lives outside. And, you know, I write about them in my book that I'm working on now. That it's just so beautiful. I mean, it's just the people are just incredible and magical. I don't know, it's just the most inspiring, the volunteers as well as the people that live on the streets. And it's the most magical experience. And that's why we're doing Thank You Santa Cruz this Sunday from noon until 4 with the live band, Johnny and the Freethinkers, because we've been out there every day for 2 years in this amazing drama of trying to navigate all the different aspects of the COVID crisis and how to keep people safe and keep things sanitary. And
is that at the town clock, Keith, that event?
It's an amazingly beautiful experience.
Where is that event on Sunday?
And it's going to be at the town clock, it's the actual day before the 200th, the 2-year date that we started at the Town Clock.
Congratulations, Food Not Bombs. We're going to have to leave it there, Keith McHenry. A big shout-out to Howard Feldstein, our sound engineer. A big thank you to our guest, Food Not Bombs co-founder Keith McHenry, Sanitation for the People's Joy Schendeldecker, and Santa Cruz residents and volunteers with Food Not Bombs, Max Summers, Zoe LeChamont, and Jazz Pierre, as well as Planning Commission Chair now, Cindy Dawson. We go out listening to The Clash, Spanish Bombs, and you know what? The revolution will not be televised or recorded on radio, but will only happen if you go out there and get involved with others in your community and organize for it. And that's what this show's about. I'm Chris Krohn of the Santa Cruz Political Report, which comes out today in brattononline.com. That's brattononline.com. This has been Talk of the Bay for March 8th, 2022. This show will be repeated this Thursday at 6 a.m. and is also available on the KSQD archive page. Good night and good luck, Santa Cruz.